20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back, Packers fans. Happy Saturday. It is the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is your Saturday crew. I am Jason Perrone, along with Mark Eckel and Paul Brettel. Mark, happy Saturday.
Yes. Happy. Today's the luckiest day of the year, isn't it?
No.
7-Eleven.
Oh, you're right. Wait, no.
The luckiest day of the year.
Oh, that's why I keep getting confused, because it's actually Friday. It's actually 7-10. And I'm like, right. Wait.
But we're doing it on, when people listening, it's 7-Eleven.
My lucky number is 7. Yeah, 7's one of them. 11 is kind of a secondary, I guess. You know, so, okay. Luckiest day of the year. And, of course, we're on the mic. Paul Brettel, how are we doing up in Wisconsin?
Fantastic. Can't beat summers up here, Jason.
Definitely can't. Why did I ever move away? I don't know. It is still...
Because of those winters.
Because there's winters, too.
Yeah, that's true. Well, just to give everyone a note, because we're kind of the weather crew, because we love to talk about it. So it's currently 109 degrees here in Scottsdale. Tomorrow is 114. Sunday is 116. And then, guys, I get a big break. On Monday, it drops all the way down to 111. So that's extreme heat advisory is going on here in the Phoenix locale for sure.
But it's a dry.
It's a dry, right. Yeah. Insert dry heat. So, all right. Well, we're getting close. The cool thing, we're getting close to training camp, at least what is supposed to be training camp. There seems to be updates every single day. So I know every week when we sign off, we kind of talk about how there may be more tangible news to discuss. There hasn't really been anything big that's come out. But what we're going to talk about today, we're a couple of training camp battles that we each have chosen that we want to highlight and discuss. So this should be a fun one. As we're gearing up for these to actually start happening. I don't know about you guys. I don't even care if it's not real. It's the same thing every year, but especially this year because sports has been so non-existent for 3 months. I am just looking forward to like the constant refresh of whatever information we can from camp. But now what is the situation with, I know no fans, but what's the situation with media? Does anyone know?
Last I saw, they were limiting the number of reporters that were going to be there, which if that is the case, that's a shame because, you know, that's a lot of insight that's going to be lost because, I mean, think about whether you have 5 guys or 20 guys. Everyone's looking at something different that's going on in the field because there's a ton of things going on at one time. Everyone has a different perspective. And so for us, the fans, that's just a lot of, you know, we might not have that same insight that we usually do.
Yeah, and then Mark, right, how do they handle that when you've got, you know, 8 reporters that all have jobs to do and you're like, well, only 5 of you can come in?
That's going to be very interesting. And from what I've read and from what talking to some of my friends that still cover, apparently there's tiers. There's going to be different tiers of media. And I think it's going to rotate. So it's not like, I don't know, depending on the team, I guess, like so many will get in one day and they'll be in tier one, which means that's like tier one, I guess, is like it used to be. You can cover it, you know, you're covering the way you used to. Tier two, I think you're there. You're allowed to be there, but like you're not going to interview anybody. You're not. It's weird. The whole thing's up there. A lot of it doesn't make sense to me. They're also, from what I'm told, there'll be no like live tweeting during practice. Which I never did anyway. But I'm not a big, you know, I'm old, so I don't care about Twitter. I really don't. I think it's the worst thing that's ever happened in the world is stuff like Twitter and Facebook and stuff.
Well, the one time, even if you're not a user of it, I mean, you get the information so quick. I mean, Paul, I think you're on Twitter a fair amount. Did you find that to be the case in a normal training camp situation where, like, you might be at work or whatever, but you're just constantly refreshing because you want to see who made the last play and who's a big, you know, name that day?
Yeah, heck yeah. There's always updates, and Andy Herman, I went to a few practices with him last year, and man, he's just fantastic of, you know, firing off tweets of everything that's going on at one time. So if you're not there, he gives a play-by-play, you know.
Is it so hard to wait till the end of the day and read a story about it?
Yes.
You need that instant gratification.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You can't wait until that 2-hour practice is over, huh?
I didn't make the cut. Yeah, I didn't make the cutoff to be a true what they're referring to as a millennial. If Jacob Wessendorf is listening to this show, he's making an old man joke right now, or he's laughing. But I still act like one in that I do, Mark. I need that instant gratification. I have become a total victim of this technology era that we live in, and yeah, I do. I want to, because we're all itching. I think it's more because
but
I'm just.
Okay, but see, here's the thing. So, and it, we could do the whole show on this. So, all right. So we're all Packer fans, and we're glued to Twitter on day three of training camp. And you read, so bang, a tweet comes out. Kay Kumerow just made a great catch. Wow. Okay. Kumerow. Oh, wow. That's good. Kumerow made a great. Then Kumerow just dropped an easy pass. Then Kumerow did. Like, just I'd rather just wait to the end of the day and say, yeah, you know, Kumerow had a okay day. I mean, I don't need to know every catch or drop he made until, I don't know. Again, I'm a lot older than you guys, and I just rather, I'm a reporter. I like to wait and get a big picture view of what happened in practice, not a every minute update.
Well, that's then we can't get it. Yeah, but yep. But then we can't figure out who our Oneida All-Star candidates are going to be, because you know we vote on those. We vote on the court of public opinion votes on those every single day, and then come the end of training camp, when that person doesn't make the roster, and we're all banging our heads on the wall like, "What?" I mean, remember that? Do you remember the summer of Torrey Gurley and DeAndre Burrell in 2011? Holy cow, it was insane. They were both going to take over the world. We were going to be able to cut, you know, James Jones and maybe let Greg Jennings go, because these two were going to come in and take over. And
oh, Darius Shepherd last.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway. There's always a few.
All right, well,
guys, I used to call him Mr. August.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good. Yeah. As soon as you mentioned Darius Shepherd, I'm end. We've segued ourselves back into our topic here. So
he made the team ahead of Alan Lazard.
I know. Just leave it at that. So many. If you want to, when we look back after the Brian Gutekunst tenure is over, and I hope that's, you know, many, many years from now. It would be amazing if his biggest four-leaf clover of his entire career as GM was getting Lazard back after cutting him and him clearing waivers. I don't know.
Well, you know who else they did that with years ago? I mean, I'm going to give you two guys that they did that with. Kabir Bob Biamala, KGB.
Uh-huh.
He was cut as a rookie, put on a practice squad. So anybody could have had him. And then they brought him up midway through that year, and he became, like, you know, what, third, what was he, second or third on the team in all-time sacks?
Yeah.
And Hasselbeck was also cut. Now, he never did anything for the Packers, per se, but he became a very good starting quarterback in the league, and a guy that Packers were able to trade and get, well, it turned out they got a bad player for him, but they got a high pick and just turned into a bad player. But, yeah, so there's history of good players being cut, and any other team could have picked them up, and they did, and they wind up back with their team. Now, a lot of times there's, I noticed from covering the Eagles, there's like handshake, wink-wink deals where, like, listen, we have to cut you because we're doing this. You know, we're going to bring you back. Don't worry. Don't answer your phone. Please don't answer your phone. We're not going to, somebody, you know, don't sign with anybody else. We're going to bring you back, but we have to do it right now because of injury somewhere else, whatever the case might be. So that stuff does, but I don't think that was the case with Lazard. That definitely wasn't the case.
No, and I maintain with Hasselbeck, I know he did a lot with Seattle, but I still maintain his best game ever was at Lambeau Field, and that was the 2003 wild card playoff game. So moving right along. Training camp battles. Paul, we're going to start with you. I'll let you introduce the battle at hand, and then we'll kind of discuss it. We each have one. All three of these should be pretty good. So, Mr. Brettel, without any further ado, take it away.
All right. So, I like to think this one might be a little bit under the radar, and it's Lane Taylor versus Billy Turner for right guard one. Reason I say it might be a little bit under the radar, I feel like there's the assumption that Lane Taylor is here to be a backup, and that very well could be the case. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, and I think this summer he's gonna push Billy Turner. So last year, Taylor was out most of the year with an injury, but I think what's been forgotten is how well he played the few years before that. So between 2016 and 17, he had nearly 1,500 pass blocking attempts and gave up just 4 sacks and 4 quarterback hits. 2018, we saw him take a step back, but whether you look at Pro Football Focus metrics or Andy's grading system that he uses over at Packer Report, Taylor's 2018 season was still, by those metrics, better than what Billy Turner did last season for the Packers. So Taylor in 2018 gave up 8 sacks, 5 hits, 36 total pressures. Billy Turner in 2019 gave up 9 sacks, 6 hits, and 52 total pressures. By looking at Andy's grading scale, he had, so 0 is considered average. Lane Taylor's 2018 season, he was plus 6.4. Billy Turner was minus 5.85 in 2019. So that's a difference of over 12 points. And, I mean, if we look at, like, Preston Smith and Andy's scale, he was plus 10.4. So not comparing that Lane Taylor's going to have a Preston Smith-type impact, but that's the type of gap that was between Lane Taylor in 2018 and Billy Turner in 2019. Now, there's question marks. Like I said, Taylor missed just about all last year. How is he going to bounce back? And there's also the money, which I do think comes into play. Billy Turner's cap hit is $8.1 million. Taylor's is a little over, I think it's around $2.5 million. Now, in the grand scheme of things, I hope that's not the deciding factor, and I don't think it would be. If Taylor's the better player, he should be starting. So I've said all that to say I think that he's going to push Turner this summer for that starting right guard spot.
And we've kind of talked about it. I hope that that happens. If it does, that's the best case scenario for the Packers, because there's other question marks on the offensive line. We don't know how right tackle is exactly going to look. I mean, Rick Wagner is penciled in there, but Billy Turner might be a break the glass in case of emergency situation at right tackle. I know that there's a lot of opinions on how that could also not necessarily be ideal, but yeah, if this turns into a battle, this ends up being not just a good one, but a very important one. Mark, I think you'd agree. I know we've talked about the right side of the offensive line several times.
Oh, this is I don't think it's under the radar. That's the one thing I disagree with you, Paul. I don't think this is under the radar. I think it's a real battle. And you pointed out, I mean, I think Lane Taylor is a better player than Billy Turner. Those numbers that you said, you know, I didn't have those, but I just know from watching what I've seen, my eyes tell me, I think Lane Taylor is a better guard. Now, you're right. He did miss most of last year. Now, will it take him time to get back in the form? We'll see. That's what camp's all about. I would not be the least bit surprised if Lane Taylor is the starter. I mean, I just think he's a better player. Now, like you said, the money's a factor, and also Lane Taylor is a guy that's been inherited. He's a Ted Thompson, Mike McCarthy guy. Turner is this regime's guy. He was signed by Goody and LaFleur, so he's more their guy. It would be if Taylor were to beat him out, it would be kind of a, I don't know, you know, not a knock on their free agent additions, but, you know, why go out and give this guy some money when you had Taylor here? But as it turned out last year, they kind of needed it. I mean, Taylor was starting last year.
Mm-hmm. Before injury.
I mean, it was only a matter of time between Elton and Jimmy. But I wonder now, I often wonder that, if Jenkins was going to get into the lineup, right? And I mean, that they didn't take him where they took him to be a backup guard. I mean, they wanted him to play as soon as possible. But if Taylor didn't get hurt and played at his 2018 level, I wonder if Jenkins wouldn't have taken over at right guard for Turner, or just moved Taylor to right guard and put, you know what I'm saying? I just wonder if Turner wouldn't have been the odd man out last year if Taylor had stayed healthy.
I think for the reasons that you know, the money that I talked about, but also, like you said, you know, Taylor's Thompson's guy, Turner's Goody's guy, and that does play a role in, you know, for all NFL teams, whether it might not be a big one, but I think that it's there. So I think for Taylor to take the job, he's going to have to win it convincingly. I think if it's close, they're going to default to Billy Turner. But one other thing I just wanted to add, one of the like underrated moves this offseason was how the Packers restructured Taylor's deal. Yeah. I mean, I, for one, I know, Mark, you've said, I think, Jason, you agree as well. I think we all thought Lane Taylor was going to be gone at some point this offseason.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
To save that cap space.
Yep.
So they end up saving the cap space and keeping him on the roster with that restructure. However, they were able to, you know, maneuver that with him in the negotiation. We don't know, but the outcome was, it was brilliant being able to do that and keep him here.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question, since you probably haven't had the numbers since you looked this up. I know Turner's cap number jumps to $8 million. What's the debt? Like, if they were to cut him, would they lose money or save money under the cap?
I don't have it exactly. This year they would lose money, but next offseason they can get out of his deal and save a few million bucks.
Well, unless he has a terrific, I mean, first of all, he has to win the job. If he wins the job and has a terrific season, then yeah, he'll probably be back in 21. But signs point to him not being around. The fact that they drafted a couple guards and they have, all signs point to Turner not being around.
He'll be on the team this year. His cap hits 8.1 million. His dead cap though is 9.75 million.
Yeah, they're not going to lose 1.6 to cut him. No, that makes no sense.
And then, but next year, next year, $8 million cap hit, but they're only down 4.5 on dead, and then in 22 they're only down 2.2. He's making $8 million a year for the next 3 years, pretty steadily.
Right, and that money that they save could go toward keeping him. Kenny King or an Aaron Jones.
Right, and they just, and especially with just selecting like John Runyon and Simon Stepaniak. Yep. I mean, yeah, Turner's really going to have to turn it around and get back to his 2018 Denver form if he's going to be back next season. But for now, I think him and Taylor is going to be a good battle this summer.
And listen, if Turner wins it, good. I mean, that means he played pretty well, you know, to win the job, and then the Packers have a pretty solid backup in Taylor.
Yeah, competition's never a bad thing.
No. And good depth is never a bad thing either.
Well, and that's what he is. And I mean, 2016, he was a solid part of the starting offensive line, and they had a really good season that year. So I mean, he's more than just a security blanket or depth. I mean, he's quality depth if you think about it. As long as he's healthy and he plays. He plays well. You know, they didn't restructure his deal, as we've said several times. They didn't restructure his deal to send him off and cut him. So, if he's getting cut, something went very sideways. But I think he's going to be – I think that battle will help the offensive line. And as far as the Jenkins things goes, Mark, to your point, you have that's where I think we're still getting a feel for how well does practice performance make a difference in the Matt LaFleur era. Because I know that – it seemed to take a long time in the McCarthy era for some of the young guys to get on the field because he was all about seniority, at least at first, in training camp. You know, the starters start, and the rookies work their way in. And it seems like Matt LaFleur is a little more like, look, I mean, I would have had to have thought that if Elgton Jenkins was as good as he was in games, he would have shown very well in practice, and the coaches would have had a huge quandary with what to do with him had Lane Taylor not gotten hurt, is my take. That's my thought. But, Mark, we're going to move to the – actually, we're staying on the offensive side of the ball for yours. So, Mark, you've got another good one. This is one that a position that's been talked about quite a bit by many, many. But in this particular battle has its own spin.
Yeah, mine is wide receiver. And I think it's everybody not named Davante Adams battling for the spot opposite Davante Adams. And Alan Lazard's the favorite going into camp, but – As we talked about before we got into this, he was cut last year. He came back, great story, had a fine season. But I think you got Lazard, you got Funchess, you got St. Brown, you still got Valdes-Scantling. A lot of people have forgotten about him. He did tail off dramatically last year, but I think injury might have something to do with that. So I think you have four guys. And I mean, I could throw in Kumerow and Big Elton too, but I really don't think they're serious. I think they're battling for to make the team, to be honest. I think those two will battle for the final spot. But I think the other four, Lazard, is it Funchess, St. Brown, and Valdez Scantling are battling for that number two and then three spots. Two and three will come out of that, out of that foursome. And they all have their strengths. They all have their weaknesses. I kind of think St. Brown might be the sneaky underdog to win that job as number two.
I don't know. I don't know how. I mean, Paul, I'll let you take this first because you said it. You said it well earlier. I don't think EQ is really that sneaky. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't think it's all that sneaky.
Well, yeah, not us. I'm saying like to the general. Sure. Well, maybe not. Maybe the general public's on it as well. But I mean, everyone thinks it's Lazard, right? I mean, that's. And it might be. It very well might be. And it, you know, I wouldn't be upset if it is, because that would mean he's playing well. But I just think it's going to be, and it could be one of those. It's not like guard where the winner is going to play and the other one's going to be a backup. It could be, you know, they could all share. I mean, it could be on, you know, down in distance, depending on the score of the game, depending on where they are, you know, where they are on the field. You know, do they want the, you know, speed at a certain time, or do they want the big, strong guy? You know, there's a lot of factors that can go into this, but I think it's going to be fascinating, and I can't wait to read those tweets, you know, every minute to find out which wide receiver is playing better.
It'll be like an up-to-the-minute update of who's the 2, 3, 4, and 5 guy on the
team. Well, 2 years ago, to that effect, 2 years ago, the reason why I got so excited about EQ was that he caught a lot of buzz in training camp when he was – a lot of videos were posted of him, double moves, and Rodgers hitting him. And it's like, okay, if Rodgers is looking for him in practice, that's the first step. There's steps to succeeding as a receiver with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. But I will tell you this. I'm just looking at a list of all the receivers that are on the roster right now, and it just seems like if you've got a number below 20, you're in pretty good shape. All of the guys that are producing really well are below 20. Devontae, Kumaro, EQ, even Funchess was like, okay, he took 11 because he's like, I gotta be under 20. Lazard, 13. And then MVS he's up against it because he's number 83. Reggie Begelton's trying to make the team. He picked number 84. Now, 84 is a very, very,
pretty good,
you know,
number.
A lot of mystique. A lot of mystique, absolutely. But
when did that happen, by the way? When did back in the day, and again, I'm going to show that I'm a really old guy, but wide receivers only wore 80s.
2000s. You know? Starting the 2000s.
Yeah, why? Did he just, was it?
I'm trying to remember who was the first low-numbered wide receiver that either made the Hall of Fame or had like a rock star career that kind of started the trend of, okay, it's cool to do this. Because you're right, I mean, and even Paul, when you first started watching too, I mean, Mark and I go back to the 80s. But it was between 80 and 89, and
yeah,
that's what it was.
They had to. It was the 11s and 16s, and they were quarterbacks still. Yeah. They weren't receivers. And, right. I don't think it matters, you know. But it all of a sudden changed, and like great receivers are wearing low numbers now too. It's not just like backups.
Of these guys who are competing for, you know, those 2-3 spots, Funchess is one that I'm really intrigued by. He was hurt last season, but in 2017 he had, I think, like 850 yards, 8 touchdowns. Like that's not nothing. That's certainly not nothing. And then in 2018, his last season with Carolina, it dipped, but he was still around the 600 yard mark. You know, that would have been Green Bay's number two receiver last year. So I'm really curious to see where he fits in.
He has the highest pedigree as well as a second round pick.
Yeah, absolutely. And then St. Brown as well. And once again, it's one of those, how is he going to rebound after missing a full season? But he's got QB1 in his corner, and we know how important that is here in Green Bay. And then during his rookie season, he flashed with some big plays, had almost 16 yards per catch. And I just want, and to Jake Kumaro, you know, I love this story as well. Went to UW-Whitewater D3 school here in Wisconsin. But he's the oldest receiver on the team. And what I really look at was last year, even with all the ups and downs, the underwhelming performances at the receiver position, he still struggled to get on the field. So at this point, we know who he is, and I think he's just, like you said, Mark, he's going to be battling for a roster spot. Yeah. And I don't know. At this point, I'm not that confident that he's going to make it.
I agree. That is Scantling still. And like I said, I know a lot of people are down on him because he kind of disappeared, but you know, look up a couple of the games that he did have. He had some pretty impressive performances.
Yeah, I got I was going to say, I got it right here. Through the first seven games, he had almost 20 yards per catch last season with two touchdowns. I mean, that's some big play.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's why I think, even though I said it's a battle, I mean, I think they're going to use guys, they're all going to be on the field of the four that we talked about. I think they're all going to have a role. And MVS is going to be your home run hitter. He's going to run the deep post. He's going to run the nine. And, you know, if it's there, you know, when a guy jumps offside, when Rodgers draws the defense off sides, he's going to go deep for MVS and see if it happens, right?
Yeah. Well, you hope. I mean, MVS started out okay last year. It was a bust season for him, and everyone says, oh, he dropped off. He was okay at the beginning of the season. But
yeah,
for the last eight games of the season, I mean, I don't even know if he caught 10 balls.
He didn't. And he didn't play at all. Like
his snaps went down.
And it just seems like he was one of those situations where, you know, there was an injury that maybe wasn't keeping him off the field, but it also wasn't helping him be everything that he could be. So it's like we didn't know about it, but it could be one of those things where years later, you know, he's doing an obscure interview after he's done playing, and they ask him about that drop off. He's like, oh, well, you know, I had plantar fasciitis in my foot or something like that. You know, it just,
no, I think there was something there. I think there was, it, like you said, it wasn't a bad enough injury to put him on injury reserve or even to rule him out for a game. But it was, and again, when you're a speed receiver and it's if it's a lower leg injury, that takes some things away from you. And then I think it got a little mental with him too. I think, you know, he had a couple drops a couple things, and it kind of just got to him. And then the quarterback lost confidence in him a little bit, and it all kind of snowballed on him. But there's obvious talent and ability there because we've seen it.
Yeah, and he just kind of, it was almost like in baseball, you hear about it a lot, a case of the yips.
Yeah.
I mean, that opening play against Chicago late in the season was just a classic case of, like, he had to have been overthinking it. You know, that game, the complexion of it could have changed very quickly and easily had he made that play, because he made it against the Broncos. Again, earlier in the season, it was like, it was two different players. There was, you know, it was Jekyll and Hyde type of a deal. I mean, he finished ranked, and from, I got into Pro Football Focus here, MVS finished ranked 103rd out of 122 wide receivers, but when he started out the season, I guarantee you he was on a trajectory to be in that top 80 or better.
Maybe higher, yeah.
I mean, he just did not fit. And then, by contrast, Lazard only played half the snaps, but if you think about it, he didn't really start playing until mid-October. You know, if you figure his season really didn't even start till mid-October, he played half the snaps, and he finished 58th of 122 receivers. So
I'm not as worried about the receiver position as a whole as I think most are. I mean, they have Devontae Adams, first off, and I think that the guys that we've went through, there's enough talent there, and they've all these guys, MVS, EQ, Funchess, Lazard, they've all produced at the NFL level. They've all had their moments, obviously some more than others, but they've all had those moments. They're not total unknowns, and it's just harnessing that into more consistency. But also in LaFleur's offense, the Packers have a ton of pass catchers. There's those five. There's Jones, Williams, Dillon out of the backfield. There's DeGuara, Tanyan, Sternberger at tight end. I mean, they have 11, you know, Tyler Irvin, they have 11, 12 pass catchers that they can be rotating in and out constantly. So, what, you know, whether all those yards go to the, you know, the receiver position like it's quote unquote supposed to, probably not. But I think they have plenty of options and talent to be effective this year.
No, I agree. I wasn't one of the people yelling and screaming after the draft that, you know, why didn't they take a wide receiver? I mean, I think the way the draft fell, there wasn't one worth taking in it when they were on the board. It really wasn't. I think, you know, the first round, the ones they liked went. I think they liked a couple in the second, but they also went. And, you know, there's no reason to reach for a guy, you know. And then by the third, fourth round, like, and I agree 100%, there wasn't anybody worth taking better than what you already had.
We know that now.
And they are young. That's the other thing, too. The Packers, as you said, Kumrow's the oldest, and what's he, 27?
I think he's 28.
28.
Okay. So that's a young group of wide receivers the Packers have.
Yeah, it is. And I think now everybody would agree with you, Mark, that there wasn't a wide receiver worth taking, because and I say that because they obviously weren't planning on taking one in the first round. If you take a first round receiver, he better unseat one of the guys that are currently on the roster. But they obviously had different plans. You know, I would love to have been a fly on the wall to know what their, you know, options, true option 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1 through 10 were. But it wasn't going to be a wide receiver. And if you're not going to pick a wide receiver, and again, they were picking late in the round too, then you've got to go with somebody who's going to make the impact. And so they did what they did. But now I think we'd agree. I mean, these guys, Funch is coming in, is, you know, Funch is only 26 years old. So
he's young.
He's not going to light the world on fire, but he could become a very steady presence for late in the season when you need a little bit of experience, when the lights become brighter and you're hopefully contending for a division title. Too. Yeah.
Exactly, Paul. He's a good red zone. And the Packers have had some problems in a red zone.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Funchess and Lazard are about the same size. Actually, Lazard's an inch taller. Lazard's 6'5", 227. Funchess 6'4", 225. Those are some big targets. Those are some good targets for Rodgers.
Well, St. Brown's not little. What do they list St. Brown as?
EQ 6'5", 214. So he's skinnier.
But he's 6'5".
Yep.
The Packers have big – their size is not a issue at the Packer wide receiver spot. Getting back to what you said about the draft – If I could ask the Packers, or, you know, I guess Goody or whoever, a question, and he has to give me an honest answer. My question to him would be, if the Patriots or whoever would have taken Jordan Love, who would you have taken in the first round? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I have no idea what his answer would be, but I wonder if they wouldn't have. You don't think it would have been a wide receiver, huh?
Man, your guess is this. Because I don't – I think I've said it before, too. I haven't seen enough. We've got three drafts with Brian Gutekunst. I still don't think I've seen enough or we've seen enough to know, like, how long did it take us before we kind of figured out more of Ted's M.O.? And he still surprised us once in a while.
Yeah. I don't think there's been – I mean, I thought I had him a little bit figured out, and then this draft blew it out of the water. Because I thought – he only takes big college guys, you know, because his first two, I mean, it was SEC, Big Ten, you know, basically, and a couple of ACCs, but mostly, I mean, it was a lot of Big Ten, and some, you know, and you know, major colleges, and then he takes a guy from Utah State in the first round, and follows it up with a kid from Cincinnati in the third round. So I mean, that didn't hold water.
Right. Right. Well, that'll be an interesting one. The receiver one, these have been good. I'm going to represent the defense with mine. So mine is the battle for the nickel corner spot. So right now, the way I've got it listed is Chandon Sullivan versus the field for nickel corner, because Sullivan has been kind of penciled in as the guy that should take on that role, assuming the Packers aren't going to bring Tremont Williams back. Because they have not signed him and he is still out there. So it looks like the Packers may be deciding that Chandon Sullivan may be a version of the next Tremont Williams from 10 years ago. Tremont is also an undrafted free agent corner. They got very fortunate with him. They had another one on their very same Super Bowl team. Sam Shields was another undrafted free agent corner. He was a former wide receiver, converted to corner. So they've obviously been able to do this in the past. And Sullivan looked pretty good at times last season. He had some struggles, but he played about a third of the snaps on defense, which makes sense because he was essentially the dime corner, and they ran a bunch of different sub packages, so he didn't have as many snaps. But he performed well. He had the good game against the Cowboys. He recently spoke with Peter Bukowski on Locked On Packers. Sounds like a guy who... And, you know, Mark, I don't know what you know about Sullivan from any of his time with the Eagles, because that was recent. But he gets cut by the Eagles, and I think that was something where he realized, okay, this job's not guaranteed. It's not going to come easy. He knows that he's got to come in prepared to play physically, to study mentally, and understand the defensive scheme. He's got some experience to maximize on this second chance that he has right now. But he's, I mean, if you look at the competition that he's going to face, because obviously Kevin King and Jair Alexander are your outside corners right now as it currently stands. You've got Kadar Holman, Josh Jackson. I should have probably listed Jackson first because Jackson's just be his third season and he was a second round pick. But you've got Kadar Holman, Josh Jackson, and then quite a few outsiders in Deshaun Amos, Kavion Ento, Stanford Samuels, who we've talked about a little bit that, you know, could end up making some noise, Will Sutherland, and Henry Black. Not names that we're overly familiar with, right? So to me, it just seems like, you know, unless Josh Jackson has a resurgence, Channon Sullivan should jump up and take this role. Now, I'm cautiously optimistic. He is a former undrafted free agent. There's a reason why guys don't get drafted, but sometimes teams miss. You know, teams just completely miss. And Mark, I guess I should turn it over to you. Have you had any conversations with any of your former colleagues about Sullivan, or was that after you left and you really haven't had many?
No, that was after I left. I mean, I watched them a little bit, but I mean, it's not like the Eagles are so talented in the secondary that, you know, for him to get cut by a team that kind of needs help there was kind of surprising. I mean, when the Packers signed him last year, I don't think anybody thought he was going to make an impact. I think it was like, they're signing a guy to bring to camp, you know, just to fill out the roster kind of thing. But he played extremely well. He's the guy. I mean, Jackson, I don't know. I loved him at Iowa. I thought he was going to be a really good player. I don't know what's happened there.
You know, it's interesting. He's listed as a safety. Pro Football Focus has him listed as a safety, and I don't know how many snaps he played at safety last season, but that's where they've got him listed.
Well, the Green Bay Packers don't, so I don't
I guess that's all that matters. Yeah, where the Packers want to play.
I mean, maybe. I don't, that would be interesting, but I mean, the Packers are up there. He's not going to start as safety. That's for certain.
Well, they made it. I mean, he obviously had issues. He only played 102 snaps on defense last season. Channon Sullivan played 378. So they clearly had a preference.
Right. Oh, there's no doubt. I think Sullivan's the guy, unless either Jackson or Holman, who all three of us kind of like a little bit, if he proves that he's deserves to be on the field at times, I don't think he's a slot guy, though. I think he's definitely an outside guy. And I think they could put him at one outside spot and move Alexander, who I think would be unbelievable in the slot.
Yeah.
So really, I think the battle is Holman better outside than Sullivan is inside? I think that's what it's going to come down to.
That'd be a huge win. He's 6 feet, 196. He definitely fits the profile. I mean, Kevin King is tall for a corner. He's 6'3". But if Holman can do it, I think that would be another good case scenario. And Paul,
it's good depth. No matter how you look, if they're all playing well, there's nothing wrong with having a lot of good corners.
No, well, corners is a position you can never have too many of. But Paul, we've talked about Kadar before. I think we're officially the three of us the Kadar Holman fan club.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Sullivan, though, like you guys have said, he's the clubhouse leader for the spot right now. Holman's better off outside, as is King. I think Jair would do excellent inside. However, for me to feel confident about him playing there consistently, and I think we'll see him there this year, but for him to be there consistently, as much as I love Kadar Holman, I'm going to need to see a lot from him early on for me to feel comfortable with that. Because if Alexander goes inside, I guess I'm assuming that King's going to take over the opponent's number one receiver. And I just feel much more comfortable with Jair in that position, King on the two, or rotating around with Holman, however that ends up working out. But I'm going to need to see something from another out wide corner before I'm comfortable with Jair taking those inside snaps. So that's why I think Sullivan's going to be that guy. He, no matter how you really look at it, whichever stat you use, he was elite last year when he was on the field. Now it's a very small sample size, and that's the big question mark coming into this year. If he does have that role, he's on the field more, defenses, you know, they're preparing for him more, just a larger sample size. Can he, you know, he's likely not going to duplicate that same level of production, but can he be effective? And that's what we need to see this season, because like you said, who's he going up against? I mean, at this point, I'm not going to put, you know, much, I guess, hope or trust into Josh Jackson just based on what we've seen. I hope, obviously hope that, you know, he takes a step forward. However, that remains to be seen. So I think it's his for the taking, Shannon Sullivan's.
Yeah, I would hope so. And again, quality depth, it's a good, going to be a good battle. If somebody steps up and really starts to push him, that's, especially given the names that he's mostly going up against, that's a really good thing. But this also leads into a good kind of a thought for future seasons where corner is, it's almost like, you know, there are certain positions in the draft that you almost have to kind of take one of every season just because they're so important. And corner would seem like one of those positions. Obviously, we have yet to see what they're going to do with Kevin King. And if they don't bring him back, I think Sullivan is actually up for a new deal. I think this is the last year he's under a controllable contract, and then he's actually got enough accrued seasons that he can become an unrestricted free agent. So they may have two corners that they have to address this next season, and then do they do that in the draft? Do they have enough money? We don't know what the salary cap's going to look like. So this could end up becoming more interesting than it currently sits at the outset, I guess.
Yeah, they've sunk so much, you know, top draft capital into that position over the years. Quentin Rollins, Demarius Randle, Jackson, King, Alexander, you know. And there's a very real possibility that come next April, they're going to have to do that again. If King, you know, duplicates last season and or improves off of last season, I think he's going to be out of their price range, you know. And then there's just a lot of young guys behind him. Obviously, the hope and the plan is that the Kadar Holman, Channon Sullivan, you know, guys like that step up. So, you know, next man up if King does go. But there's also the possibility that we just don't know, and King could be gone, and then all of a sudden the Packers are spending, you know, another top 50, top 100 pick on the cornerback position.
Right. Right. Which, if you're gonna take a corner, I mean, you know, they've got other things they might have to address, but you're going to want to, if you want an impact guy, and especially if Kevin King isn't back, I hope they're not taking any corners below that and expecting them to just turn into something that isn't necessarily fair to expect them to be. So, I mean, defensive wise, I mean, there's some good battles here. I mean, this was a good group of battles to watch out for. And the big thing for me, because I listen to a lot of shows, I listen to Andrew Brandt's The Business of Sports, and it sounds like there's still some things to be figured out with regards to the season starting. And you know, I used to be so far away. I mean, this whole thing that we're currently dealing with in the world right now started for us in what, mid-March, and it just seemed like training camp was like eons away, and now it's a couple weeks away. That means that the season starting is 2 months away. That's only 8 weeks to figure out everything that's going to happen, including our fans going to be able to attend games, how our fans going to be able to attend games, who gets to attend games, who doesn't, all that other kind of stuff. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I say as my token line, we'll talk next week, and maybe by the time next week rolls around, there'll be something else that will hit that was worth talking about. I mean, I guess the one thing I could have started out with as far as news is that I think we were talking before the show starts, there's only one draft pick left to sign, and that's third rounder Josiah DeGuara. Everyone else, Kamal Martin and Jake Hansen, signed their deals. Everybody else is signed. So is anybody worried that DeGuara is going to hold out?
No, I hope not.
It'd be a bold move.
Yeah, bold move.
One thing, Jason, just to add to what you were saying about, you know, it was, you know, back in March, it was like there was so much time. Murphy was quoted this week. I forget by whom, but I think it was a national writer. Him saying that, you know, saying almost exactly what you just said, that, you know, when this all started, you know, we were the NHL and NBA were going on, and they had to suspend operations, and baseball was in spring training and they had to stop. And, you know, we were in our off seasons. We had our draft as planned. We did free agency as planned. And we were like, okay, we'll be here. And I think the great quote he said was, now time isn't on our side anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, football had all this time to, it didn't affect them really. Like I said, you know, like he said, the draft went, it was a different style of draft, but I don't think anything would have been any differently if there wasn't a COVID-19. You know, I think the Packers would have still taken Jordan Love in the first round no matter what, you know. And free agency went as planned, I think, you know. I don't think anything was different. So, but now it's hitting football. You know, how are they, like you said, how are they going to, is there going to be a preseason? They've already cut it down from 4 games to 2 games, and the players want no games. I don't think, I kind of think there's not going to be a preseason.
Well, if no preseason is, if the expense or if the the other side of not having any preseason games is that the regular season is less interrupted, then obviously I'm all for it.
Right,
because preseason, you know, I mean, you need reps and you need to see how your rookies look and all that kind of stuff. But if you told me that if they give up preseason games, they don't play any of them, but they'll be able to play 16 games, then I don't think I'd have any issue with it. I mean, Paul, do you feel differently?
No, I agree with what you guys have had to say, and you know, usually I'm not that big of a preseason guy. I just cross my fingers, hoping no one gets hurt. But now I just want to see Jordan Love play, and now we might not have preseason. So moving forward, I'm never going to be upset about preseason games again.
Yeah. No. Well, it's been a fun one, and we'll do this again in another week. Like I said, we'll have another week to see if anything goes down, or if not, we'll have another fun topic for everybody. So, well, before I sign off, let's go around the horn here. Paul, Dairyland Express, Cheesehead TV, what's on tap for this week?
Just previewing training camp, and then you can find me on Twitter at Paul_Bretl, B-R-E-T-L.
Awesome. And then Mark over at Packer Report?
I'm actually, it's funny, my story for Monday is going to be about some training camp, you know, battles to watch in training camp. And then later in the week, my series will continue with the best Packers to wear the numbers in the 80s. So I'll be able to get some of those wide receivers that used to wear number 80s in there.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. A fun one, no doubt. All right, well, everybody stay safe, stay cool, enjoy the summer wherever you're at. We'll be back in one more week. And as always, go Pack, go.